Okay, it's 7 o'clock, so let's get started. Don't forget to put your name on the sign-up sheet at the table right there. You can do it now or when you're leaving. So I just wanted to know, did anyone set up a meditation place in their home last week? Okay, great. Did anyone do any of the meditation practices? Okay, wonderful. Does anyone want to share anything about their experience, their meditation experience? No? All right. So in case there are people who were not able to attend last week, and just for a quick review, I just wanted to go over some of the topics we covered last week. So meditation is not about relaxing or stopping thoughts. It's about becoming familiar with something. It's a virtuous object. And the purpose and the power of meditation is to reduce negative mind, negative thoughts. And concentration is trying to focus single-pointedly on that object of meditation, continuously for as long as you like, whenever. And the result of concentration is to have a calm and peaceful mind. So when your mind strays from the object of meditation, then you use mindfulness to bring it back to the object over and over again. You redirect it, your mind to the object, and then it's mindfulness again that you use to try to keep that, your mind and your focus on the object, and make sure that it remains there without drifting off. So that's the purpose of mindfulness. It's like a rope that trains the mind to the elephant mind to stay on that object, which is like the hitching post is what they use as a metaphor. So we try to set up a meditation practice at home. We try to find something, some place, a corner of your room, whatever, a place that is clean, quiet, and comfortable. Wear comfortable clothes. You try to start with short, frequent meditation sessions, and then when your practice becomes more stable, you have longer and fewer sessions. And also mentioned, forgot to mention that this is a very good resource, How to Meditate. It's it says it's by Kathleen McDonald, but she has, let's see, Sanjay Kondro? Let's see, she is, yes, Venerable Sanjay Kondro is her ordination name. So this is a very good resource right here. And I believe many of these practices probably come from this book. And they were done in conjunction with the FPMT, which is directed by Lama Zongpa Rinpoche. So it's a very reliable source. And then we talked about the 7-point meditation posture. You know, if you're sitting on a chair, try to keep your legs flat on the floor. If you're sitting, have your legs crossed. Your shoulders are level. Your arms are away from your torso. Your hands are right on left with thumbs touching, or you can have them on your knees if you like, whatever is most comfortable. I've read also that, you know, when you're doing this practice, sometimes your thumbs get sore because you're pressing so hard. So you can also put a little cushion on your lap to sit on your hand if that makes it more comfortable. And then, of course, your back. The most important thing is to have your back straight. Your eyes are sort of unfocused in front of you, and if that's not possible, just lightly closed. Your jaws and your mouth are and your neck are very relaxed. All your tension are is removed. Your tongue is at the roof of your mouth, behind your teeth, and your head is tilted slightly forward. Then we practice the counting breath meditation. We try to count whatever, from 1 to 7, 21, whatever in the time. And then if you lose your focus, then you go back to square one. Start all over with one. And then you can just sort of examine your mind and see if your conceptual mind has quieted. Then if it has and you have no problem counting, then you can just, you don't need to continue this practice. So let's try that. Let's try the counting meditation practice just very briefly, maybe for 5 minutes. I'll sound the bell once to begin and once to end. So just try to get into your meditation posture. And it's fine to shift from like the cushion to the chair or whatever if you prefer, but try to be mindful of not disturbing others. course, I forgot to mention that, you know, if any thoughts or emotions arise, any projects, so forth, you just label them and just let them go. And that's the practice. Okay, now, sometimes, you know, in our daily routine, we get very engrossed in things that we really enjoy, that things that we are very attracted to. And when we do, we are completely captivated by it, and we focus on it so strongly that we don't notice anything else that's going on around us. We're hardly aware of it. And that's what is called stability. So when you, in the context of meditation, when you are meditating and you've been sitting maybe for a short while, and you look at the clock and you find out that a lot more time than you had thought had passed, then that's stability. But if you are sitting there and you keep looking at the time and the clock, then that's a lack of stability. And so what we're trying to do is we're trying to maintain mindfulness of the breath. And when we do that, we focus on, you know, a certain part of your body. You might be focusing on the air going in and out of your nostrils. You might be focusing on just the air at the tip of your nose, perhaps your chest rising and falling, or your abdomen falling, rising and falling. And if you do, then let's say your object is your abdomen rising and falling, then don't change it to the air going in out of the nostrils, for example. Don't change, in other words, the meditation object. Try to keep the same object. And also, just as a, you know, when a gardener plants a garden, wants to have a nice garden, then the gardener tries to create the right conditions for the garden to have, you know, great results. So the gardener would choose the right seeds, the right soil, fertilizer, the amount of water and sun or light, and then just let your garden grow, and just wait. You know, you've done whatever you have done, and so the gardener knows that, you know, excessive effort, like watering it every 3 minutes, is not going to help the garden at all. You just have to kind of wait and let the plant do its thing. So, and in the same manner, for meditation, we set up the right conditions also. You know, we set your meditation practice, your location, your concentration cushion, your concentration room, your practice, your posture, and you choose your meditation practice, and like, for example, counting breaths and so forth. And then there really isn't that much more you need to do. You just keep doing these sessions for a short amount of time and frequently, for example. So in other words, you know, for beginners, often people will try to they want quick results, so they try to change things around or add things and so forth. And that's not necessary. You need to stop agitation, anxiety, and just practice with ease, and then the results will come. So, do we? Are there any questions so far on what we covered in the last session and this session? Okay. So let's try just the breathing meditation. Don't count your breaths. Just focus on your breath wherever you want, you know, whether it's your nostrils, your chest, or your abdomen going, you know, up and down, rising and falling. And again, don't judge any thoughts, any emotions. Just let them go. And let your body, yes,
Can you just talk a little bit more about, when you talk about labeling it,
Labeling. Okay. All right. Examples of labeling. Okay. So let's say a train goes by, then you can label that as a noise and just let it go. You might hear someone shifting and moving, and maybe that disrupts your practice, your concentration on your breath. Then you just say movement and let it go. If you have maybe a thought, something that happened in the past, or something that happened today, this morning at work, you know, something good or something bad, it doesn't matter whether it's a happy thought or a sad thought or fear, whatever, then you just say, just label it as a thought. That's a thought. And just let it go, like bubbles, like that. Okay? Okay. All right, so let's try the breathing maze. Now, if you feel, as you're sitting, if you feel any tight areas or tension, then just inhale, take a deep breath, and then exhale the tension out of that spot with your out-breath. Okay? So this time, I'm going to ring the bell every minute. And then at the end of the exercise, at the end, at the 10 minutes, I'll ring the bell 3 times so that you know that's the end of the breathing meditation practice. Okay? All right, so I'll start once to begin. And then, you, of course, get into your, try to get your back straight. Try to relax. Be natural. Okay. that was a 10-minute meditation practice. All right. So now I'd like to talk about the nature of mind. According to Buddhism, mind is a non-physical phenomenon. It's has two aspects. It's clear and knowing. So it's clear in the sense of a mirror that reflects everything exactly as it is, and it's knowing in the context that it's consciousness and awareness that engages with objects. And it's non-physical. It's not your brain. So when it's more like mind moments or consciousness. So we have many, many moments of consciousnesses during the day, millions upon millions. And each one is due to a previous moment of consciousness. So everything has its cause and its effect. So as I mentioned before, the mind is very powerful and, you know, as wild as a squirrel, as someone mentioned, and it's capable of incomparable development or devastation. So the problem is that we think too much, and when we tame our mind, then our fears go away, and we create a positive attitude easily. The mind needs constant attention. It's very tender, like a baby, like a small child. And you need constant effort to nourish it and change it through meditation. And we have to guard our mind through mindfulness and alertness, and try to train and control our mind, our thoughts. Very critical to do so. We have to protect our mind just as we protect our bodies. And why is that? Because everything depends on the mind, on our attitude, the way we look at things. So our perception of all our outer and inner phenomena depends on our own mind. So in other words, happiness and also suffering depend on the mind. So having a calm and compassionate, loving mind is also caused by having this, well, it develops peace of mind. So that, you know, you can just imagine, you may have even seen people like this who are always, have positive thoughts, and they're always smiling. It's really wonderful to approach someone who's calm and peaceful and always positive and smiling. It, then if you have that type of personality or that kind of mind, you have a better impact, a better on your family, on your friends, your coworkers. So you would feel, well, you would be calm, you would be peace, and they would feel that, the people around you. So the cause of happiness is a positive state of mind. It's not something outside ourselves. In other words, no one can destroy our happiness except ourselves. So we meditate to develop this positive state of mind. We protect our mind in order to benefit not only ourselves, but to benefit all other beings. So all appearances are reflections of the mind. And all our pain and difficulties come from these internal and external illusions. It's like we're watching a magic show, or we're actors on a stage. And so we should treat everything as an illusion, as a dream, and not make it so solid. Don't feel that it is so solid, because we project about 90% of our reality. Things aren't as solid as we think they are. So what happens is that when we encounter an object, we distinguish it as either attractive, unattractive, or neutral. And then if depending on whether it's attractive or unattractive, then pleasant or unpleasant feelings arise, or a neutral feeling would arise. And then from that, we become very attached to it, and then craving arises. A very strong attachment then comes from craving. Grasping arises from that. And so we project qualities that that object doesn't even have. An example would be like, for example, something that we really want. I don't know, a new computer that's coming out, a new iPhone, new tablet, whatever, new boyfriend, girlfriend, movie star, whatever. There are some things that we project because, and we know that isn't true because later on we might not have the same strong feelings that we used to. Maybe we're still slightly attracted. We think that they're pleasant, but maybe we're not craving them or grasping that item anymore. It's, we're bored with it. You know, we've lost interest in it. So obviously, the characteristics that we projected on it were not real, not solid. Any, you know, because they didn't last. If they were, then they would always be wonderful. Chocolate cake would always be wonderful, for example. So in her book, Comfortable with Uncertainty, Venerable Pema Chodron writes, when you feel craving, you could be sitting on the edge of the Grand Canyon, but all you can see is this piece of chocolate cake that you're craving. With aversion, you're sitting on the edge of the Grand Canyon, and all you can hear is angry words you said to someone 10 years ago. With ignorance, you're sitting on the edge of the Grand Canyon with a paper bag over your head. Each of these three poisons has the power to capture you so completely that you don't even perceive what's in front of you. So that's really interesting how the mind can really trick us. And you can also tell because different people see the same thing, the same object, in a completely different way. So when we narrow our mind, then small things can easily disturb us. They can easily affect us. So we need to step back and take a broader perspective of what we're looking at and try to stay focused in the present moment. Try not to think about, you know, the things in the past and what might happen in the future. Just try to think of that object right now in the present moment, or your own situation in the present moment. So His Holiness said, the human mind can become stronger than steel. To train the mind, you must exercise patience and determination to shape that steel. With patience and practice and time, change will come. Do not give up. If you're hopeful and determined, you will always find some measure of success. Winning the gold medal does not matter. You will have tried your best. So now I'd like to invite you to, in a sharing activity, if you would just choose one partner and talk about some examples in your life of some problems created by negative mental states like anger or fear or jealousy or pride, and how this happened, this created further problems because of that. And then take one specific problem and then imagine how you would respond positively in that same situation. So just take one person, and if there happens to be one person who's just left alone, if you please invite them to join in your group, and then I'll sound the bell to end. Okay, and then I'll ask people to share. So, okay, please start.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Thank you very much for sharing and participating. Now, would anyone like to share with the group the negative state of mind that made things worse? and then the antidote. How would you have, you know, what you could have done in order to make it have a more positive result? There are a lot of talking. And, oh, okay, get to wait for the mic. Thank you.
My name is Carl. My boss is, our relationship's not great. I don't think he's a great boss. He was having us put up goals for our work year. And then he asked us to write down for him goals for our personal life.
He's just amazing.
Thank you. And I thought it was, you know, I was upset. You know, what's he doing getting involved in my personal life? This is none of his business and stuff. And then, you know, so it was like my anger at him was affecting my ability to write down some goals for my personal life, you know. And then after I let it go for a while, I just wrote down some goals for my personal life, and it was helpful to me, you know. And so instead of just being angry at him for, you know, like overreaching, I just let him, you know, gained from him on that one. So
thank you. So that was a good outcome.
Good evening. My name is Atiyah, and I was inspired. Thank you for sharing something similar. I received an email from someone. I sent her a thinking of you email, and she responded by sending me an email she sent me in July and then sent me a note saying I hadn't responded to that email, and, you know, when I responded to that email, then she would respond again. And I had some very negative thoughts about her and about the email, and recognizing that there was something that, you know, within me that was being triggered and not really knowing what. So fortunately, I didn't take any action. I just waited a couple of days. And this morning, realizing that I was still having some feelings about it and needed to just do some writing. And as I started to write, I decided to look at her second email from this week again to see how she had characterized things. And I realized that it wasn't as I had initially thought it was. It wasn't quite as, you know, needy, if you will. It was more balanced. And so I was able to get to a place of understanding and compassion and respond with love. And so it all took place in my head and didn't actually have any negative consequences outwardly with her, but it did rob me of my serenity for a couple of days. So, but fortunately, it turned around. So thanks.
Thank you. You don't have to talk, you know, you may not have had a good response, but you could just explain how you could have responded better, you know, even if you hadn't. Any other, anyone else want to share? Okay. All right. So now I'll talk about... Yes, Chris.
I'll tell my story.
Okay.
I'm Chris. I run all this stuff and the speakers and all that. And something changed here. Been working on it for weeks. And I'm on the management team, so we're in the management meeting. And I explained this problem and very frustrated with this whole thing. And someone at the table laughed. And I was sure. I was so tense about everything going so badly for so long with this. I just pretty much lost it. You know, I yelled at her. I got up. I left. And this is in a Buddhist center. I yelled, got up, went outside, walked around the stupa a couple dozen times, and got in my car and took off. Okay. Now, last weekend, I was in here with another guy who runs audio, and it took us about 5 hours to finally whip this thing into shape and figure out all the problems and do all the little details. So then, to make sure that we had everything right, I came in here earlier this afternoon about 3 o'clock, you know, for the 7 o'clock teaching. I had 4 hours to get it done, right? And it was amazing how it was just as hard as it always was, you know, trying to figure out all the little steps. But nothing really got me, even when it wasn't working right and I wasn't sure what to do next, it just remembering how, where was I going with that? I was in such a good mood since I had worked on it with my friend and we had figured it out after 4 hours. Things were still going wrong, but it was, didn't lose my cool, didn't say, oh, well, nobody watches anyway, and take off and not do anything with this, which is my job. And but it was just the same situation, just, you know, one person laughed in the management meeting. I got up and left and went home. And today wasn't any harder or anything, but just being in a good mind, remembering how well things went with my friend. No problem if it takes 4 hours. You know, no problem if things weren't working out right away. So,
thank you. Thank you. We appreciate all you do for the Kadampa Center. Yeah. Okay. No one else? Just want to make sure. No one else? Okay. Thank you. All right. So now I'd like to talk about the 9-round breathing. And this is the an exercise that we really need to do before we do the breathing meditation exercise. But the notes said to introduce it later. So according to the teachings of the Buddha, our body and mind exist not only on the gross physical level, but also on the subtle level. So just as the physical body is pervaded by an ordinary nervous system, you know, it's millions of nerves, the subtle body and mind is pervaded by, the subtle body is pervaded by thousands of channels or pathways through the subtle body. And the consciousness or mind rides on wind or energy throughout the channels. There's the movement, just as a rider travels on a horse. That's how it's usually compared to. So the energy moves around all the time in our channels, and the mind and wind, mind is sim in Tibetan, and wind is lung, energy, rides together. They can't be separated. They're joined together. So this 9-round breathing meditation that was taught by Shakyamuni Buddha over 2,500 years ago and also commented by Vasubandhu in the 4th century, the purpose is to get rid of this imbalanced energy that's stuck in our channels. So the imbalanced energy was caused by the mind. If you don't concentrate, your mind becomes in balance. It's full of stories, and it can't concentrate on a single object. It's like small creeks are very weak, but when challenged in one becomes very powerful. And we do this, this is the same as focusing our attention on an object. So when your mind is balanced, it becomes flexible and can be turned into something positive. And so we balance our mind by focusing on something, by bringing our attention on one single object. And in this practice, the object is our breath. So first, for this practice, you keep your back straight. Say we're not familiar with the seven point meditation posture, but the important thing is to keep your back straight, because if your back straight, then your channels are straight. And then you examine your mind. You observe your mind. Is it neutral? Is it negative? So if it's neutral, then you just breathe naturally. If your mind seems to be negative, then you breathe, you exhale forcefully. And so what you do is that, this is going to be backwards because I'm facing you, but you take you always begin with an inhalation for the nine-bound breathing. In the counting meditation, you start with an exhalation. But in this one, you start with an inhalation. So for the first three rounds, you take your left hand, the middle finger on your ring finger, and then you seal your left nostril, and then you inhale deeply, completely filling your lungs with your right nostril. And then move your finger to your right nostril and exhale through your left nostril, slowly, completely. And forcefully if your mind is negative. So you do that two more times, and that's rounds one through three. And for the fourth to the sixth round, you take your right hand, you put your middle finger on your left, on your right ring finger, and then you seal your right nostril and inhale through your left nostril, slowly, completely, then seal your left nostril and exhale through your right. So you do that three times. And on the last three rounds, seven through nine, you inhale and exhale through both nostrils. So let's do that. Okay. Starting with your left hand. Inhale. Okay, so that was round one, two, and three. And now we go with our right hand for rounds three, four, five, and six. And then both nostrils for the last three rounds. Okay. Does anyone have any questions? Yes. Hold on just a second.
So if you are neutral or feeling negative, you start with your left hand or?
Oh, it's the same.
The same.
The same hand.
Okay.
You know.
And you said this is a practice you do before breathing meditation, is that what you
said? Yes, uh-huh. Because, and the reason is because it's very hard to meditate even for 3 seconds if your mind is negative. You know, you can barely even sit still. So you need to try to make your mind flexible and so that it can turn to something positive. So you have positive minds. Geshe-la said, our teacher says that trying to do meditation practice when your mind is negative is like trying to wake the dead. It's that difficult. So that's the purpose. Okay. And then it's not, you know, often people do this, you know, more than one time, you know, because it takes a while to do that. Okay. So just briefly, so what we're trying to do when we meditate is we're trying to create familiarity with a virtuous object, and so we have to have an object to focus on. If you just sit there without focusing on anything, it's just like, as they say, trying to climb a mountain with no arms, a steep hill with no arms. You put all your energy into that single object. And when you do that, you will shut down all your other thoughts. Just doing that, I know when I first started, it was like instant peace. Because it just stopped, conceptual thoughts stopped, all those conversations that had been going on, all those worries. I worry a lot. Worries, fears, anxiety, anger, all that busyness just stop because you keep your mind in the very present moment. You're aware of where you are. You're only here. You're not thinking about what might happen in the future, you know, or the things that you may have done wrong or what someone did to you in the past. You stay right here and you just focus on your breathing. So it's just amazing what you can do. And it requires a little effort, you know, a little practice, because you can't just do it in one, you know, sitting. It takes a while, because it'll come back. You know, your negative thoughts will come back. So it's not, it's a permanent bandage. But it will, if you, with practice, your mind becomes more pliant and, more kind and more loving. It's quite amazing. So and the simplest meditation is breathing meditation. Some people just use breathing meditation all the way through the 9 stages of calm abiding. It's just amazing. But of course, you know, you try to decide on a meditation object and then try not to change it. Okay, so as I said, when you focus on your breath in this present moment, then you stop the ongoing conversations. And you stop. It just really does shut down the other thoughts. So now I like to introduce 2 more meditations. And of course, as I said, they're both on the website. The KadambaCenter.org under spiritual programs, introductory programs, meditation 101. Okay? So I like to do the meditation on the mind like the sky. So as you get into your meditation posture, just try to breathe naturally. And of course, we need to start our meditation with motivation. So may this meditation be the cause to develop our mind to become a wiser and kinder person, to be of benefit to our family, friends, co-workers, and other beings. But this is a guided meditation, so I'll be reading this. So just allow your mind to be attentive and observant of whatever comes to notice, regardless of what it is. Simply observe them like a tourist. Allow thoughts and emotions, projects to arise as you observe them and pass away without getting involved. Just be aware. Now allow your mindful attention to expand, to encompass your entire sphere of experience of consciousness. Forget that there is an observer and something being observed. Simply imagine your experience, your consciousness, as being just like the sky. Completely clear, vast, spacious, without end. Concentrate on this experience. Identify with this experience. Clarity, spaciousness, awareness. Our minds are completely clear, just as the sky is completely clear. The light of the sun shines down on us through the clear sky. Our awareness and wisdom shine through the clarity of our minds. Sometimes clouds fill the sky and obscure the sunshine, but the sky doesn't get upset. The sky doesn't identify with the clouds. The sky doesn't judge. The clouds just pass through the spaciousness of the sky. They come and they go. The clarity and spaciousness of the sky isn't compromised by the clouds. They just arise and pass. Our minds are clear and aware, spacious like the sky. When a thought or an emotion, an idea or an image or a sensation arises in your mind, just observe it. Let it arise and let it pass. Each thought, each mental event, is just like a cloud. Your mind, the sky. Concentrate on that experience of space and bliss. Whenever we identify with and are carried away uncontrollably by a thought or a feeling, we lose any awareness of the spacious clarity of our mind, of the vast, clear, and knowing nature of the mind within which each thought or feeling occurs. Our perspective becomes small and constricted. It is as if all there is are clouds. We've lost the sky. We lose that wonderful, open spaciousness. When we can simply observe these thoughts and feelings arising without getting involved, when we can identify with the sky instead of with the clouds, then we can reside in that spacious purity of our basic clarity of mind. Calm, clear, peaceful, open spaciousness. Without agitation, without delusions, without anxiety and distress. Without dissatisfaction and attachments and aversions. And so we end with a dedication. May the positive energy we have created through the practice of mindful meditation bring peace and well-being to ourselves, our family, friends, and all others in every moment of every day. Does anyone have any questions about mind like the sky? The meditation, mind like the ocean, is very similar. Instead of the clouds, we think about the waves as being the thoughts and emotions. And then, you know, when you go below the surface of the ocean, it's very calm. It appears very calm and serene. So that would be like the sky. Okay. So for our homework, if you would please practice one of those meditations, like the bare attention meditation, mind like the sky, mind like the ocean, you know, at least once a day, and then please be prepared to share your experiences or problems, whatever, at the next session. And then next week's topic is to be covered will be types of meditation, different objects of meditation, obstacles and antidotes to the obstacles, meditation on transforming negative experiences into the positive. Okay? Thank you very much. Thank you for coming. Have a nice week.